Okay, so maybe it's an American thing, perhaps a Western thing, but there is this idea, this conceit, that in all the world, somewhere, out there, there exists a perfect person for you. And your job, if you choose to accept it, is to find that individual, the one that somehow completes the unmatched puzzle piece that is you. Most people never accomplish this quest. Of course, they give up, things happen, they settle, life moves on. But for a lucky few, fate intervenes. Light breaks from the heavens, the galloping steed slows down, and from the mist steps the perfect match. Well, we wondered how things really go down the instant after the fog clears. Snap Judgment proudly presents The Perfect Match. Amazing stories from the aftermath. My name is Glenn. I don't want to be a player no more, Washington. And you're listening to Snap Judgment. Now then, if you've ever wondered what it would be like to be trapped on a desert island with only one other person for a year, well, Snappers, that's why you listen to our show. We take you there. We do these things so you don't have to. Snap Judgment.
I was working as a clerk, or I think you may say clerk, for the tax department. And every lunchtime, I sat in a library looking at maps and newspapers for inspiration. But this particular advert, which was in a London magazine called Time Out, appealed to the moment I read it. It went like this. Writer seeks wife for year on tropical island. And the word wife was put in quote marks, which told me it didn't really mean wife. I wasn't anywhere near ready to settle down and become an ordinary member of civilization. And when I saw that advert, I just thought, oh, yes, that could be it. That could just be absolutely right for me. The man who placed the advert was Gerald Kingsland. So I phoned this chap that I knew nothing about from one of those old-fashioned red British phone booths. We met for a drink in a London hotel. And I noted at once his suitably Robinson Crusoe-ish red beard. He asked a good question. If I could take a very few things, what would I take to an island nobody'd ever lived on before? And I said string, because string, fibre, any kind of thing that you can tie things with is just always useful. He thought string was a very good idea. Gerald outlined the parameters for the venture very simply. He just said a year on a remote tropical island with no contact with civilization. He did say that he had other girls to interview, but he would get back to me soon. And he did. It turned out that this particular island came under the jurisdiction of the Queensland government, then under the control of a very extreme politician. He said that in order to go and live on an uninhabited island where only goannas and turtles and birds would see what we got up to, we would have to actually get married and have a marriage certificate. And finally I just thought, okay, I mean, it's a piece of paper, it's just a piece of paper. But part of me obviously didn't think that, because we stood there in a little registry office with no friends, proper friends there, or, you know, no cake, God's sake. I cried my eyes out on the night of my wedding. We made an agreement before going through this rather absurd joke of a marriage ceremony, we made an agreement that after the year he wouldn't hold me to the marriage at all, that I was just free to go. I think he was quite hurt, but I so clearly didn't want to marry him. He'd always wanted to go with a girl to a desert island, so, you know, there was in him a hope that there just might be the possibility of love from this relationship. Can I talk about arriving at the island? Arriving at Toon Island for the first time, we were in a motorised canoe, which was manned by indigenous islanders of the Torres Strait. It was a bit like out of a film. I mean, that part of it was a bit like out of a film. It was so classic desert island. We were bouncing over these little wavelets in a blue sea there, with ahead of us this island we were going to live on for a whole year. Palm trees waving, white sand, sun blazing down. But when we actually got there, and there's a sort of crunch as the boat lands on the beach there, and then it was just all practical stuff. We had some things we had to unload. We'd taken just the very minimal supplies that Gerald had suggested right at the beginning. Seeds to grow, that was very important. Emergency water bottles, very important, but really a very small amount of what you might call groceries to keep us going until those seeds sprouted. Had a little bit of rice, some porridge oats, and of course tea bags. There were larger things like the tent that Gerald had provided. There was an axe, a bucket. I did take off my clothes pretty well straight away. Didn't see much point in keeping them on, and we were hot. And he did the same, I mean, after a little while. And it rather impressed me that an old man like that would be so uninhibited. Gerald started getting the tent up, and I thought, well, is that the ground sheet? It was very small. When he'd got it up, he stood back proudly and said, well, there we are. And I put my head in and I thought, oh my God, that is tiny. He just went to sleep and I lay awake for ages, just loving being there and thinking of what we were going to do in the morning. Well, in the beginning, we had those minimal stores. We'd go out, we'd walk through the shallows to get to a good spot for fishing, climb onto a big rock, so that we weren't got by the sharks that would come in pretty quickly as soon as we threw out any bait with blood on. When we went fishing, we both got coral cuts on our legs, but mine healed, his didn't. And again, this was from quite early on. And these cuts that he got in his legs began to turn into holes, and they just got deeper and deeper. These were serious coral ulcers, and they caused him an awful lot of pain. I was expecting, of course, that this leader, this man, this older, wiser, more experienced person would be going out of camp every day, exploring, cutting down wood to make a shelter, dragging in great logs to make a wood pile. The bottom line was, I was full of energy and enthusiasm. I wanted to get things done, and I thought that he would want to get things done. And he was kind of the opposite. I got fed up of him not doing any wood chopping. I would start to go fishing by myself, and I'd come back and he'd be lying in the same position on a very, very old green towel, the only towel that he took to the island, in the same position as when I'd left camp. At the beginning, I just thought, oh, well, you know, he's going to start doing stuff soon. One of these days he's gonna get up and say, right, this is the day we're going to start building the shelter, Lou. But when I realised that this saying, oh, we'll do it tomorrow, was going to go on, my respect for him went down. It became clearer and clearer as the days went on how different we were in our approaches to the island. I just loved it, and I was beginning to, in a sense, lead a completely different life during the days. I'd go off early in the morning and I'd explore. I'd listen to the birds. I'd follow turtle tracks. I'd find flying foxes hanging in the trees. And it was something I kept from Gerald. It was very private. I didn't tell him about my favourite rock, where I lay. And I felt, in fact, very, very sensual. And I'd come back from there, humming a tune, maybe, really happy, glowing. And he'd say, God, you think you'd had a lover on the other side of that island. You really would. He had a point, because I had fallen in love with the island. Although it sounds all very Blue Lagoon, this falling in love with the island, Tuin was, in fact, quite a hostile little island. It wasn't a beautiful tropical paradise at all. I think I, in a sense, chose to fall in love with it. It was a survival tactic. Always been a fairly optimistic person. And if I was going to be stuck on this island for a year with this man with whom I was getting further and further apart the whole time, I had to find a way of enjoying it. And by having this sensual relationship that I did with the island, I did find a way of enjoying it. I loved it.
When Snap Judgment returns, a desert island like no other. But first, next time someone says, you won't believe the Snap story about the desert island I just heard on public radio, you say, public radio, huh? Oh, I'm a member. Smoking. Fire. Be a member. What is that number to dial so you can say Snap lines with such confidence? What is that number to dial?